Think about what most people eat to sustain their health, wellness, and immune function. Welcome back. Hour number three, and we try and pack as much as we can in these programs every night for you. Again, to make your decisions, you need the best data possible. Mitchell Henderson is back, and Mitch, you finished your book, I understand, and I need to get busy.
Yes.
So I will. And hope for a release. We hope for a release date, what, in a couple months, maybe? Month?
Well, it could be sooner than that. I mean, it's right now I'm editing it, and I'm going to put your forward on it, then you'll send it in, and it'll be basically good to go.
Great. All right. Mitch, every week, presents, and it's basically like a paper. He takes an idea and a thesis, and he develops it and expands upon it and gives us all insights on this horror show that is being totally directed, created, and installed on the planet. Nothing is left to chance here. There's no coincidences. It's all scripted. Don't forget it. So let's spend just a minute on what you emailed me about. This is very important. The war on white people is already well along. No joke. When you consider that 80% plus of Americans, mostly white, were injected with the death shots and they're on a short fuse, they're in trouble. 80% are in trouble here. At the very least, many of them are going to end up, they're going to end up out of the game. They won't be able to participate anymore. They'll be crippled. They'll be whatever. The war on white people is well underway. How do you see it?
Well, I think we were talking about what you and Erica were talking about on the sterilization. Okay, the shot basically can sterilize you. Okay.
Well, yes, it does. It does, in fact, sterilize both sexes.
On that. Yeah. Let me throw a little bit more light on that. There's the physical way that it does it, and there's a psychological way. The psychological way is, and I've talked to many, many people about this, who have families who got the shot, okay, they absolutely will not produce another child because they're afraid that this shot changed their genetics and they do not want to have like android baby or something. They don't want a genetically modified baby is what they're afraid of.
You betcha. Okay? I totally understand.
So, and I mean, this is not just a fear. This is something that's very heartfelt with them. Okay. Yeah. They are in dread fear of that happening. Okay. They don't know what might result from it. So they're afraid to do it there. So even if there wasn't a physical GMO, like change to make them sterile, they have psychologically sterilized them in any case. Okay, so it's a double whammy. So you take you take that, and you take the social thing. And I've already talked about Engel's book on the family property in the state. Okay, one of the objectives of Marxism is to destroy the family and destroy the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. Now they have infected everybody with this mind virus, such as that a lot of young men now And this is, I've heard the complaint from women too. I've seen this on media. Women say, well, there's no men who will date them. Okay. And men are like, well, you know, a white man is the enemy. So, young women are sort of psychologically discouraged from hooking up with or dating, white men, and certainly not marrying white men, because white men are the enemy. Okay.
Another page in the absolute evil of this war against whites. Right there. You just laid it out. Turning white against white.
Yes, they have successfully done that. So let me just go from I'm not an eligible young man, okay? So this is not actually a big problem for me. But if I was an eligible young man, this mm-hmm. These are the problems that I would have. Okay, first of all, I would want a woman, a normal woman. Okay, because women attract me. I'm very attracted to women. Okay, as should be. Okay,
pairing off is as normal as it gets. Of course.
Right. So in other words, when I look at women, I'm a man, so when I look at women, I'm very attracted to them. When I look at a man, I find them repulsive. Okay, so there is no attractive. I can get along with men, but it's women that I'm really interested in. I mean, there's almost a magical, natural feeling that I have towards women, an attraction towards them. Okay, however, I have found this in my life because I was a soldier. And when I was a soldier, a woman who's in the military, I cannot be attracted to. They're not women for me. Okay. Mm-hmm. A police officer, when I was a police officer, there are many very cute, pretty, nice, even some nice, decent women who were police officers. I just could not be attracted to them because they're doing a man's job. Okay. When I was in college, and because I was in college a lot, I have five bachelor's and a master's degree, so I spent a lot of time in college, and I met a lot of feminist women. A feminist is not a man. I'm not a woman, not a woman. A feminist is not a woman, and I cannot be attracted to them. As soon as that word
Mitch, if I might say
mouth,
this, Mitch,
that turns
Mitch
out.
Am I correct when you're saying I can't be attracted to them or I won't be involved with them? It's not an issue. It's not a political statement. There's some real, serious, severe psychology involved with a woman who wants to be act like a man.
Yeah,
and
man.
How much more manly
yeah,
can
yes,
you get than
yes.
if you're a cop or a soldier?
Yes. Well, let me ask you this. It's the same thing because I've worked around a lot of women in my life, and I've known a lot of women, and these women will express like they're very open-minded about transgender men and stuff like that. But I've never met one, even if they were very open-minded about them, that wanted to have a relationship with a transgender, man to woman. They don't find that appealing. Okay, no. Well, it's the same the other way around. It's like I'm not saying that I wasn't attracted to these police women or these military women for any kind of political reason. I'm saying that just naturally, like a regular
Understood.
Woman,
I,
I'm very
I get
attracted
it.
To her.
Yeah.
But if they're in uniform doing a man's job, that it kills it. I have no attraction for them. If they're a feminist, I have no attraction for them because I can't be attracted to somebody who detests me for being a male. Okay. And I'm not going to run around and kiss their butt and try to make them like me when they're feminists and they hate men. Feminists hate men. It is man hatred. It is the hatred and willful destruction of the patriarchy, the family, the children, the everything, society. They are Marxist zombies is what they are, and they don't appeal to me. So this is part of the problem also, okay? This is what they want women to be. They want 30% of the Secret Service to be to be female, really they want 50%, just like they want 50% of the army to be. But see, this is an ideological thing. The problem that they're having is women don't want to be in the army, and women don't want to be federal agents, and women don't want to be police officers. Women don't want to do men's jobs, okay? So
they inherently don't, but they're conned into it. That's the problem.
Yeah, they're
pressured and conned.
But they also have a lot of buyer's remorse. I've talked to some female infantry types, and they hate it. Mm. They detest it. They don't know how they got bamboozled into doing that. It's not natural for them. They can't stand it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But that's what the Army wants them to do. The Army wants half of our frontline soldiers to be female. Okay. It's just this insane, obsessional thing
It sounds like part of the birth control
do.
Movement as well. Take them out of the breeding populace, turn them into something else.
Oh, well, yes, certainly. So this white genocide is a comprehensive thing. It touches every aspect of your life and stuff. So importing people from third world countries. I mean, I've talked about before that the whole concept of individualism came out of Protestant Northern Europe. Okay, that's where we moved to America, and we says we want to be just left alone. We want to live our own lives and be left alone. We want to make our individual life, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as we see it, not as some professor tells us what happiness is, but what we think will make us happy. Now, some of the decisions we make, most of the decisions we make will be bad, but you know what? It's our decision to make. Okay. But what we're it's not just a matter of people of color. It is also a matter of these people come from collectivist societies. They're anti-individual societies. Individualists are not appreciated in Japan or China or Thailand. The Asian societies are the most collectivist societies.
Or they remind me of ant colonies, Mitch. Ants. They have their assignments. That's it. They're the colony.
Yes, it's like they're all the same. Let me put this in a European context, though. Okay, so in the European context, Roman Catholicism is where you get to Christ through the church. Okay, so you have to belong to the church to be saved. This is very collectivist. The Protestantism broke away from that and saying, no, you can approach God on your own. You don't need the church. And this beckons towards individualism. Okay, so Southern Europe is mostly Catholic, okay, Roman Catholic. Eastern Europe is Eastern Orthodox. Okay, and Eastern Orthodox, they have this concept called hagiasm, where everybody goes to Christ at the same time, as a group, as a collective, okay? So we're talking within Europe, you have collectivist Christianity, okay? So you have three branches. So Northern Europe is individualistic Christianity. Southern Europe is collectivist Christianity. And Eastern Europe is collectivist Christianity. So and that's very key to people, okay? Now, culture itself in Japan and China is also very collectivist. And when you get to India, Hinduism, you see in Hinduism, you're all going towards the Atman together, but you have to play out your role in this life as what you're assigned to be. So in a way, it's a very collectivist thing also. Okay, so then when you get to Islam is it's the ummah. It's the your faith is within the ummah or the population of Muslims. Okay, it's this brotherhood between Muslims that carries you on your way towards Allah. So it's just in an African traditional cultures, okay, it's the same thing. They're very collectivist. It's you're not important. It's the tribe that's important.
That's right.
It's the clan that's important. It's your ethnic group that is important. Okay. Now, what I got to make clear right here is I don't have a problem with any of that. I think people in Nigeria or Uganda should be allowed to do that. That's their business. I don't think they should have to live like Americans want them to live. I think they should be allowed to live as their culture and their society has always lived. If they, you know, they have a right, a fundamental right to do that. So do the Japanese and the Chinese, because I've been to these countries. If you go to Japan, people are happy within that framework. I've gone to China. I mean, our news tells us all the time that the Chinese people are not happy with their lives. This is bullshit. Chinese people love their culture. They love their country. They're happy within the context of their culture and their social mores. They are happy within that. They can find satisfaction there. Okay. So, it's like what they have to feed us all the time is how these other people are unhappy with their cultures and how their cultures oppress them so that we can say that American culture is what everybody needs. I do not think so. I think many people would be very upset with American culture. They would not be happy. Are most Americans happy with the culture that they have and the way they live now? Why do we have almost $1 trillion psychotropic drug industry? That doesn't come from happiness, Jeff.
Is it almost $1 trillion now? Wow.
Oh, it's unbelievably high. Okay.
That's huge.
I mean, you have to see, you got to remember statistics are basically lies. Okay. They tell you kind of what they want to tell you, but then let's just look at it. Let's say that the psychotropic drug industry is $295 billion dollars. Okay, then let's look at how much marijuana is sold every week, every day. In Albuquerque, there's almost a marijuana store on every street corner. Okay,
right.
Okay, they exist there because there's that many people smoking marijuana. Okay, so. Marijuana is a psychotropic drug, just like tricyclic antidepressants. Although I would honestly, and I'm just saying this honestly, I think probably marijuana is a lot safer drug than these other drugs that the psychiatrist gives you. One of the great scandals in the VA is the fact when you go to the VA for a psychiatric help, you're suicidal or whatever, they give you tricyclic antidepressants and stuff that actually cause you to commit suicide. And there's this epidemic of suicide in veterans, and it's because when you go to the VA, the first thing they do is they want to give you a pill, and that pill is what sets you off down the path to suicide, okay? Because it's altering your brain chemistry. I'm not the only person that's saying this. This is sort of like I talk to a lot of I get my health care from the VA, so I talk to a lot of veterans, and this is what they tell me. They say that the VA is like, you got a problem, take a pill. They just don't have the resources to do psychotherapy or cognitive therapy or anything like that for anybody. Okay, so the help is just a pill. Because that's cheaper and easier to do, okay? And besides, if you kill yourself, it saves the VA a lot of money, okay?
Oh, they don't care about human life anymore, not at all.
No.
Very little.
They don't. So you see, it's all very comprehensive. So they want to import these people from all these foreign lands, okay? And it's not because they're just a different race. It's because their societies that they come from are collectivist in nature.
That's very interesting observation.
So,
I get it.
So what they're trying to snuff out in the end, what are they trying to snuff out? Individualism is what they're trying to kill. That's what they want dead, is individualism. They want you to obey. They want you to be a slave, okay? So small group of rich people want everybody else to be stupid slaves and do as they're told. Okay.
Sounds like an old theme to me, Mitch. Old theme.
Yeah, it's old. It's as old as humanity.
Yep.
So.
Master and slave.
So they are accomplishing this. You know, it's like, Democrats say, well, they have to save democracy. Well, look how democratic the Democratic Party is. In 2016, they disregarded what the voters wanted, and they ran Hillary Clinton instead of Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders clearly had more support than Hillary Clinton did.
I agree.
But they, the elites of the Democratic Party, the DNC, they wanted Hillary Clinton. Okay, then they ran. They had an entire primary season with lots of different candidates. But then they picked a guy who wasn't even running in the primary, Joe Biden, to run for president. They decided on him, and now Joe Biden has resigned from this run. But the party elites decided that Kamala Harris was running. They did not ask the Democratic voter who they wanted. The Democrats are not even Democratic within their own party.
Oh, okay? They can't even play the game. Somebody announced in the party that she is the nominee. They actually announced it like it's a done deal.
Yeah.
It basically is a done deal.
Yeah.
Unless something big happens and there's a big upset. We'll see. I've talked about that earlier.
Well,
go ahead,
I mean, there was other people who wanted to run for the Democratic nomination. And like I remember in Florida, they just totally ignored those people. This is not Joe Biden's going to be the guy running. Period. They just decided it. It's not like the Democratic voter has any choice in the matter. They tell you who to vote for, just like the Communist Party of the Soviet Union or the Communist Party of China tells you who to vote for. It's the same exact way. Okay, so saving the democracy means saving the privileges and entitlements of a few rich people. That's what it says. That's what saving democracy is. It's got nothing to do with the people.
Exactly right. Totally right. Yeah.
So.
Well, the people have never been dumber. Are less well-informed than they are now. It's terrible to see. They don't have a clue, most of them.
Well, I like that video you got up there of scrolling your way to doomsday. This is what I see when I walk around in society. Everybody's focused on their cell phone, looking at things on the
screen addiction.
YouTube,
they're all addicts.
Social media.
They're addicts. Addicts.
Yes. It's an addiction. It's a very effective addiction. Also.
Very insidious. Very sinister. It's at the top of the homepage.
Sure.
Look for doom scrolling. It says it all.
And listen, let's just keep in mind when they say worship the beast, what is worship exactly? What is it? A worship is what you give your attention to is worship. If you give all your attention to your social media, that is who you worship. And what is the beast? Years ago, before they had social media, I remember when we moved into a new home, I bought an entertainment system, TV, stereo, the usual stuff, the regular gear that everybody has.
To keep you plugged into the matrix, of course.
Put it in a big cabinet, against the wall and stuff.
Right.
And my little boy asked me what this was, and I said, well, this what you see here, this is the altar where all Americans worship. This is where we come to worship, right here. This is what we worship. What's on this screen, I said, this, son, is the beast. Okay. So you know what?
Well, that's good. And now the altar is now eminently portable. You can take it with you wherever you go.
Any minute
of the day, you can
altar.
Kneel down before the altar and become more ingrained in the matrix every time you do it.
Yep.
And they've got it. They've got it.
Yeah.
Take that TV away from people, and you want to see withdrawals, Mitch? I'll bet they'd be violent, a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. yeah. Well, you know, it's I always try to. I was very fortunate, Jeff. I lived overseas a lot and for years and years, and so I didn't watch TV. I didn't really watch entertainment like that. I might go to a movie house and watch a movie or something, but you know, you can't do that just all day long all the time. So you know. No. It wasn't so much of an addiction.
Well, it's a once-a-week thing for some people, and in the 30s, movies, that was the altar. That theater was the church, the movie theater. We all know that.
Well, and my father told me, my father hated sitcoms, and he told me, he says, why would you waste your time sitting there watching somebody else live life? Why don't you just go out and live life yourself? You know?
Dad was totally
So just think about it. It's all reflexive. It's like you attend high school and go to high school events and stuff, and then even after you get out of high school, what do you find yourself doing? Watching high school movies and high school event movies and blah blah blah. You know, it's just like it's very reflexive. You go to the office and work, and then you watch shows about the office to work. And, you know, I had a little bit of a problem with that because the work that I did was hyper-violent and stuff. And when I tended to come home, the last thing I would want to do is watch that. It's like, so when I was in law enforcement, I could not stand to watch, like, Hill Street Blues and all that stuff. It's just like, if I wanted to watch a cop show, I'd watch, like, a comedy like Sledgehammer or something. It was totally ridiculous, nothing like real police work. So that would be entertainment to me. That would be police entertainment to me, not an actual, you know, like Hill Street Blues show or NYPD Blue or Blue Bloods or any of this. And not only that, but those were brainwashing programs because they would introduce many socialist ideas in there, like Magnum P, not Magnum P.I., but Hawaii 5-0 was so blatantly anti-gun, it was not funny. And Hawaii barely has any guns now as a result, so it works, you know.
Right.
On there, so.
Well, everything on the screen is designed to impact the masses that are watching it to some degree, one degree or another.
Mm-hmm.
It's all programmed content to configure the masses how they want them configured. It's not, see, again, I just have to keep saying this. You watch that screen, and that becomes your reality, whether you want it to or not. That's you defer to that as reality because it's in your memory banks. Got it? Go ahead.
Right. So even when you, you know, I've always kind of like I was just talking about, I kind of like humor, kind of like comedy and stuff. But when you look at comedy, even comedy is all within the context of movies and shows that you watch.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
They riff off of other things, even like Saturday Night Live. Well, they'll do a riff on Fatal Instinct, or they'll do a riff on The Terminator, or whatever. When you see the comedy that they do, they're doing comedy about other TV shows and media shows and stuff. Okay.
It's all within the same matrix. All of it.
Right.
You have to understand.
Exactly.
Mitch is saying it perfectly right. It's all emanating from the same matrix of control. That is reality for most people. If you watch that stuff and it's just repeated X number of times, it sticks, whether you want it to or not.
So let me give you another example so you should know by now, everybody should know by now, that everything the government tells you is a lie. I mean, everything they tell you. So when they give you economic indicators, economic statistics, they're lies. They're lies meant to make the economy look good when the economy, everybody knows the economy sucks. So they lie to you and say how wonderful it is. Okay, so we just had a 1,000 drop in the Dow today. Okay, and this had an effect on foreign stock markets. Japan's stock market fell very hard today. The Nikkei index just really took a dive. And so I see this guy, this financial wizard guy, giving you advice on finances, and this is what he says. He says, oh, no, this is just a correction. Okay, it's a correction because the reality is that that we will kind of overheat a little bit and we need to come back down to reality, okay? I want you to look at the beauty of this is that what he's saying is, well, there's a correction where we came back down, we're coming back down to the real economy, okay? But let me tell you what he is really saying. What he's really saying is, we've been lying to you about the economy, and it's not sustainable, and it's starting to crash. But you know what you need to do? You need to go out and invest right now, okay? It's just lie upon lie upon lie. It's just a continuation of lie. Can they pull something out of the hat and get the economy looking better again? Oh, they can always get it to look better, okay? But it's not going to be better. We already know this game. They've been telling us how wonderful Bidenomics is, and we go to the grocery store, and everything costs more and more and more all the time. Our heating bill goes up. Our electricity bill goes up. Everything goes up. Our gas bill goes up. But they're telling us how wonderful everything is at the same time, okay? So you have to realize, people, this is the entire U.S. government. Do we have democracy in America? No. What we have is the appearance of democracy, because real democracy is too expensive and too time-consuming and too slow to make things happen, and we want progress, so we can't really have democracy. So what we're going to substitute it with is an appearance of democracy. Okay, we can say, oh, well, in America, you have justice before the law. No, you do not. You have the appearance of justice, because the appearance of justice is cheap. So like in criminal justice, somebody does a particularly heinous crime. Well, we'll go out and arrest them and make an example out of them. That's pretty cheap, okay? But to arrest every person that goes out there and rapes, murders, and robs, that's way too expensive, and we don't have enough time in our courts to deal with that. So we wash all that away, and we just dangle these few big major cases out there, and we come down hard on those few people to make it look like the system is working and the system is taking care of something. But you know from watching the news and living in your own neighborhood, you know that there is no justice. There is no crime control. There's only an appearance of crime control and an appearance of justice, okay? So the appearance is cheap. The actual thing is very expensive.
It's all about image. Okay. It's all about image.
Right.
We live in such a visual candy world of image.
Right. It's appearance over substance. Substance
always
doesn't matter. It's the way that it appears. I learned this early on in the Army, like when I had to go before my sergeant's board. Well, the regulation said I had to have a white T-shirt on. Okay, but actually, you know, having a green shirt under that green uniform actually looks so much sharper, you know. And so I didn't follow the rules. I did what was more sharper. I presented them with eye candy, okay, and of course I got promotion to sergeant. Okay, so even though I wasn't regulation, all right.
Got it.
And instead of having a brand new buckle to my uniform, I just took a magic marker over the old one. Okay. And the magic marker is going to wear off within a few hours, but I only need it for that first hour to look good. The rest of the time, it doesn't matter. So this is something that we even talk about in the military all the time. Eye wash is more important than what's actually happening. Okay. It's all about eye wash.
Yeah.
So this is the way that the world works, okay? So you know, there's many fears about this totalitarian state that's soon coming on. I mean, we're there, people. We're headed there. We're gonna be there. But I want you to keep in mind, okay, it's very important to them that you believe that they have total power over everything. But I want you to keep in mind that even when this totalitarian state comes, even when this Antichrist comes, appearances are still more important than the reality. They're not going to have the money to actually
Absolutely.
Do it. Okay.
That's right.
They're just gonna. This is something. I remember there was a cop that I worked with in Tampa named Brett Bartlett, and he got me a hold of IRS Special Agents Manual. And there, right. It stated very clearly that there's no way we can possibly get everybody to pay taxes. So what we're looking for is voluntary compliance. Okay, because if we actually had to enforce it, it would be very difficult to enforce. So what they said is, if you go, if you subpoena somebody to come to court, and you subpoena their records, okay, and they come to court, then this is where you can make your case, right? But, and this is exactly what the IRS Special Agents Manual said, if that person shows up in court but refuses to speak, which he has a right to not say anything, right of against self-incrimination, and he when they ask, did you bring your records with you, and he says yes, and you say, may I see them, and says, no, not without a search warrant, in court. If somebody shows up to court and refuses to speak or to divulge the records that they brought with them that day, you're to drop that case, because you don't want everybody else out there to know that you don't have to speak and you don't have to show your records.
Got it.
And this is what it said in a government manual. Okay. So you know, it's like they know. And stuff.
Here's the bottom line, Mitch. The control that they wield, go back to Tavistock, go back to Edward L. Bernays, go back to Pavlov and his dogs. They know exactly how to manipulate this population. They have now dumbed it down so it's even more achievable. It's even simpler to control the masses with imagery.
Simple.
It's sight, sound, no touch. No touch needed. It's sight and sound. Those two senses control virtually the vast majority of humanity now. They've just got it. They've got it nailed. It's so insidious and so thorough and so clever and diabolical. It's evil. And they do it.
Right. So what I want to do is I want to just briefly here start into my preparing for the collapse of civilization, because I think people need to start preparing now. So so you need to start getting ready now for what is coming. You need to steel yourself mentally and develop the right mindset. You must have the will to survive. You must be prepared to never give up and be resolved to deal with whatever may happen. You do not have to acquire everything in one day, but you need to start acquiring the equipment and supplies that you will need to survive what is coming. As you go along, you can improve your go bags. You should have a personal one, one for the city and one for your car. It is better that you understand how to think about what you need. Starting with the rule of threes, you need to prioritize your needs. You can live 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, and 3 days without food. However, in an environment of war, anarchy, and crime, you need to also protect yourself from violence. You will need the skills to know how to avoid violence and the skills to know how to deal with violence if you cannot avoid it. So let me start off with air, okay? Air is not so much of an issue outside of violence. Air becomes an issue when violence is considered. I will have a separate chapter on nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare. For the moment, I will discuss the threats to your air that other humans can impose on you. To effectively fight in the city, you will need to employ smoke to cover your movements, tear gas to move people out of their hiding places, and hand grenades to disable people in their hiding places. In most places, smoke and tear gas are legal. Hand grenades are illegal, and making them is illegal. It is a serious federal crime. So do not do it. Once society falls apart and there is no law and order, it is a different story. It would be a good idea to go online and look on YouTube for videos on how to make hand grenades. Just remember that the simpler the mechanism, the more likely it will work when you want it to. The thinking is obvious. Make hand grenades while the government exists, and you may find yourself not able to survive because you are in jail and obviously not equipped to survive. Wait until there is no government to arrest you, no court to try you, no prison to imprison you. Tear gas makes it hard for you to survive. People can make other toxic gases to attack you with also. For this, you need a gas mask. You need a gas mask if you are using tear gas so that you are not affected by your own weapon. People will use these weapons in rural areas also, but they are almost necessary in an urban environment. The best kind of gas masks are military gas masks meant for chemical warfare because they protect you against the most toxic chemicals on Earth, and they protect your eyes. Nerve gases are the most toxic, but not likely to be available to civilians. Keep in mind, though, like in Japan, Amshinrikyu, they made some. So do not think for a minute that the United States government will not use nerve gases on American citizens. They would in a heartbeat. History is full of stories about what horrible things the government of the United States has done to defenseless civilians. If you are exposed to long enough to gases, they can break down the filters in your gas mask. You will have to change the filters. The standard U.S. military gas masks are difficult to change the filters while in use. I will suggest the Israeli gas masks that have external filters that screw on that make it easier to change the filters while the gas mask is in use. In addition, a tactic used in chemical warfare is to attack with a blood gas first, cyanide gas, which will break down your filter, then follow on with the use of a nerve gas. At any rate, a gas mask can be very useful in day-to-day fighting in the city. Even in rural areas, you may be attacked with tear gas by civilians. Although tear gases are not as useful in open environments where the wind can dissipate them, they can effectively be employed when there is no wind. Keep in mind that you are in a rural area and it is hard to get to. Our government is likely to deal with you by just gassing you. After the Vietnam War was over, the Phet Lao and Laos opted to fight the Hmong hill tribes on the cheap by gassing them in their remote jungle villages with Soviet-supplied yellow rain nerve agents. A gas mask is a good investment. You need air to breathe. Okay, so next week I'll go on with water and stuff like that. So I just wanted to get started on this and get you start thinking about it, okay? I mean, air is also, it's not just a matter of gas mask. If you live in a dusty area, it'd be nice to have a bandana or something to keep you from breathing all the dust in and stuff. Just think of, you know, and a bandana is a small object that you can easily carry with you, you know.
So that's a good idea.
Just consider
simple.
Those things. So now, when this thing's coming, you know what they're going to keep doing. What they're going to keep doing, Jeff, is they're going to keep creating little crises to keep you worried, to keep you
chaos.
Engaged.
You bet.
Okay.
Chaos.
For example, when you look at Russia, I finally was able to talk to some Russian sources to say what's going on in Ukraine. Why don't you just go in and finish the job? Well, because Russia may have to defend Iran, and going to Iran and Syria is going to be logistically much more difficult than fighting in Ukraine. So they do not necessarily want to get in. Here's the situation. So Russia is not going to lose Ukraine. They're not going to lose it. Okay. But so right. Their priority right now is they have to be ready to fight in Syria and Iran. That's where they have to be paying attention to right now. So we would like them to be worried about Ukraine, but they're kind of comfortable that they're not going to lose in Ukraine. But they could lose Iran. They could lose Syria, and they cannot afford to do that.
So, Russia will not tolerate the loss of Iran and Syria.
No.
No way.
No. Russia has what Russia has done is they've already started sending fighter jets to Iran, just like we're sending fighter jets to the Middle East.
Well, Russia is
sending them to Iran.
Of course, They're not doing this for
and
a
this
joke.
This is with
either,
Russian
friends.
Pilots.
They're getting
this
ready.
This is with That's Russian right. pilots.
That's right.
Right. On it. They also right. have, because Israel's probably going to have to use a lot of drones and stuff like that to attack. Well, Russia has sent state-of-the-art jamming, electronic warfare jamming equipment.
Right.
So this is
They've got some
this
good
is
stuff,
important
too, I understand.
Yeah, yes, they do. They do. Let me just tell you that I know I've said this before, but like for us, a division is about 10,000 men. And for that 10,000 men, American electronic warfare has one company. That's 200 men to do electronic warfare for a 10,000 man unit. The Russians will have an entire brigade for a division, okay? That's about 2,500 men engaged in electronic warfare. And that's their men with their equipment, okay? That does everything from jamming to intercepting messages, to scrambling messages, to jamming radars, jamming communications, jamming the target acquisition devices that are meant to hit a target accurately and stuff. So this is not a new thing either. This is old. I mean, when I went to my Armored Cavalry Officers Basic Course in 1986 at Fort Knox, we had a class on Soviet radio electronic warfare. Okay,
right.
And I can't get into details of that because it was a very top secret class, and foreigners were not allowed. And sometimes we train. Like, we had a Saudi Arabian officer in there. If we have foreign officers in there, they can't go in and see those classes, okay?
Huh.
That's for
right.
American troops only. Mm-hmm. And but the important thing is you know, if I say that they are much better, much more developed, much more capable than ours, that's not really classified, okay? I mean, you can hear that everywhere by everyone. Even Jane's Defense Weekly will tell you that. So that's not really a secret, okay? So, you know,
timeline.
What's
our time, Mitch? People want to know. They always want to know. What's the time mm-hmm. frame? What are we projecting here? They're getting ready now to the point that they're literally pre-positioning jet fighter squadrons, apparently in Iran. Iran has, I'm going to guess, tens of thousands of missiles that can hit Israel. Israel,
hundreds,
if there's a war,
hundreds of thousands.
Israel is going to nuke. They're going to start throwing their nukes around, and there will be retribution. I think the Iranians already have.
Russia
nukes,
will nuke. Russia will nuke Israel. If Israel launches a nuke on any country, Russia yeah. will nuke them. Will nuke them. If Russia has to nuke Israel, Russia will nuke NATO at the same time. Okay. It would be foolish
sense.
Of them to
well,
nuke Israel.
Of course not.
After
they have to.
After
right.
Israel nukes Iran, Russia's going to do retribution, okay? Because this is how Russia has convinced Iran to not go ahead and make a nuke, is they says, mm-hmm. well, we'll cover you, okay? So Russia has to attack Israel, and if they attack Israel, even though Israel is not NATO, okay, mm-hmm. Russia knows that NATO will respond with nukes, so they have to attack us at the same time. Okay, and as soon as China and North Korea finds out that Russia has sent nukes to America and its allies, they're going to be launching too. Okay, because they would be incredibly stupid beyond anything Joe Biden could be. In order to not do it, it would be just unbelievably stupid for them to not do it. I mean, you take advantage of the enemy when he's down, kick him when he's down. You got to, or you're going to pay later. You know, I mean,
and
they're seeing that now with
trouble.
Hezbollah in Gaza. Gaza's getting its butt kicked. I mean, they're just murdering people like crazy, and Hezbollah's had a tepid response to that. Also, keep in mind that remember the Arab that the most of the Sunni Arab countries have American bases in them, and that's how they keep. It's a double check. That's how America keeps them from attacking Israel. But then those countries also says, well, America, you can't attack Iran from our territory. Okay, so it's an actual balance of power. But Egypt, their balance is the multinational force along the Israeli-Egypt border, which is just one brigade, one infantry brigade. Okay, and we pay $1 billion a year for Egypt's military. But you know what? $1 billion? Yeah, Russia can give them that. They have other places. China would give them that. So what is Egypt doing right now today? They are massing troops. They're getting ready to go to war for Israel. And yesterday, the foreign minister of Egypt told the foreign minister of Lebanon that they will help them.
All right, that's a big statement right there. Big. Turkey? Yeah. Erdogan, Turkey?
Erdogan has said he is going to help Gaza, too. He's ready to invade. I mean, listen, so here's the time frame, Jeff. Here's the time frame, okay? They're going to keep playing this incremental war for a while, but I think everybody should just sit down and realize that before the end of 4 years, we will be in a thermonuclear war. So it could be any time from tomorrow to 4 years from now that we're in a thermonuclear war. Okay?
Okay. All right. Well, the ingredients are all there in the pot.
Yep. Everything's sure. Ready to go.
Yeah.
Everything's
yeah.
Ready to go for even the biblical apocalypse. The Armageddon War. Everything's lined up for that. I mean, so it's just three and a half to four years is going to go off.
Light the fire
yeah,
under
let
the
me
pot
just say this.
Cook it off. Go ahead.
Yeah, if we want to go by prophecy, there's two prophecies. So the Abraham Accords, if we go from when they were signed in September under Trump, I think it was 2021 or something like that, I can't remember the exact year.
Yeah.
But 7 years.
We have about 30 seconds,
from
Mitch.
When the
Go
Abraham,
ahead.
Okay, from when they were signed, it would be September of 2027. The Jewish Messiah, they say their thermonuclear war, their Armageddon, is in October 2027, and that's by the Jewish gematria and the dates and stuff that they go by.
I got it.
So we have two prophecies sort of showing up around the same time. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mitch, for everything, as always.
Okay.
Great stuff.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. You be well.
Okay.
Mitchell Henderson. And you all be well as well. Try to prepare. We are running short on time. Very short. Thank you for being here. Talk tomorrow.